This is the Mouths of the South podcast.
You shut your mouth when you're talking to me.
The official Dirty South Soccer podcast.
Do you understand the words that are coming out of my mouth?
Talking all things Atlanta United FC.
Don't nobody understand the words that are coming out of your mouth, man.
We are
the Mouths of the South.
The South got something to say. That's all I got to say.
What's up, Atlanta? This is the Mounds of South podcast brought to you by Dirty South Soccer in the Palatial 680 The Fan Studios. I am Eric Quintana. Next to me, Josh Bagmianski, here on a Wednesday, Wednesday night, joined by the YouTube streamers. What do we call this thing? I know that Home Before Dark calls it the trap. Should we come up with a name with it? Should we?
We should. But I think maybe we should have thought about that before we went on.
We should. This is very spontaneous. Very spontaneous. No soccer the last 2 weeks. For Atlanta United, how have you spent the last 2 weeks?
Oh, man. Well, so I coach kids, so I'm around 8-9-year-olds and then high schoolers, and they were on spring break last week.
So you're a babysitter.
Sometimes. This week especially. They were on spring break last week, so we got a couple of the teenagers coming back from spring break. We've all been there, right? So you come back, your mind is not back for some of them for the rest of the school year. And then I've got my little ones, my 8-9-year-olds. And on Tuesday, they were completely unfocused, running around, chasing after. One of them saw a butterfly fly, but it was unbelievable. And then finally, when I finally got those kids focused after like 30, 45 minutes, there's lightning. All the kids have to come off the pitch and then wait with them for their parents to pick them up. So I tell you, man, like kids...
The attention span of
man,
a goldfish, is that the goldfish don't have good memories? Is that what it is?
Gold, right? They do have like goldfish memories.
This is what you get with a 2 week off.
Spring break, they're in another world.
This is the conversation you get on a podcast about Atlanta United after 2 weeks of no action.
Oh yeah, right. I mean, I don't know what's been going on, but anyways, I've left practice every day this week, thanking God that first of all for parents. They have to deal with this, and also thanking God that I'm not a parent because...
Well, don't say that yet.
Well, let me tell you, my child is not going on spring break.
You never know what surprises could be looming around the corner.
Oh, God.
There, Josh.
Yeah, I don't really get into that one, man. I'm telling you, it feels like we haven't played a match, like Atlanta United have not played.
I know. I left halfway through the Columbus match because I don't think I've talked to you since then.
Yeah.
I left halfway through the Columbus match because I couldn't do it.
I would say next to nothing to take from that match other than you looked a little bit better going forward in the first 30 minutes before the pitch became, a trough.
Cool.
Yeah, so, I mean, it's been so... I mean, you wonder if that's going to be a good or a bad thing heading into New England because on the one hand, you've had a lot of time to train and almost had like another preseason in some ways. And that's kind of what this team needs right now, I think, is a time to reset... Be together and not necessarily playing matches, just trying to get the system and tactics down, trying to get healthy, although that hasn't really worked out too well. So maybe it'll be a blessing in disguise, kind of essentially having what's going to amount to 3 weeks to a month off.
My hope is that they've got rested legs, they've figured out the system, or at least made some massive progress towards the system. People are coming back from injury or from whatever, issues they might have. I'm hoping that Atlanta United comes back. Look, I just want to point some things out about the other podcasts around town.
Uh-oh, fighting words.
Not calling out, but it does seem that there's not a lot of actual debate that goes on these podcasts. And I'm not excluding ours. I think a lot of times we get sucked into that agree mentality. But when we disagree, we don't really put up fights. I think you got that once or twice on our podcast. I don't really hear that on Soccer Down Here. I don't hear that on Home Before Dark.
Usually we're fighting with Sam, who's not here this week. So
I don't hear that on... I hear it a little bit on Siempre United. A little bit. They do it often, actually. And is it on... Unrelegated does it a little bit.
So it's too much agreeing. You want more tension on your podcast.
I tweeted out earlier. It's like, I need some more like first take. Like Skip Bayless, Stephen A. I need some disagreements. I need some back and forth.
Well, if that doesn't happen with what's been happening so far this season, it's set up for a very first takey type of debate. I mean, because you have the crazy fire Frank DeBoer crowd now, and then you have the other side of the coin. So certainly there's much debate to be had. One of the big debates I'm hearing, and I've heard, I don't know if I've heard this on a podcast, or, but I've heard people refer to this match as a must-win against New England this weekend. Of course, that's my least favorite term in sports because
here's the thing.
Don't have to win it.
First take, they would, you know, he would pick one side, I would pick the other. We're not, obviously not going to do that because that's just ridiculous. So we're going to fall into this whole agreement thing here. So it's not the easiest thing in the world to do, and so I'm not excluding our podcast when I bring this up, but I do wish we had more.
Well, that's why it's hard to do, because you end up having a debate about whether a regular season match in April is a must win or not.
Which I absolutely think.
And of course it's not, because you could lose this weekend and win the rest of your matches. And that, but I would say this, though, Eric. What type of urgency do you think Atlanta United goes into this match with? Because certainly, while it's not a must win, certainly it's a must improve. We must see a better performance. What are the musts in these 90 minutes in New England we have to see?
I said it on the podcast, but I just...
on the radio show.
I'm sorry, on the radio show.
We're doing the podcast right now.
Yeah, I just want to see improvement. I want to see great improvement. I want to see that everything's... It doesn't necessarily need to be a win, but everything needs to start clicking. A lot more... It needs to be visually, aesthetically pleasing.
Mm-hmm.
Much more than it has been in the past.
Similar to what we said going into Columbus. And I think... And I mentioned this briefly right after we went on here moments ago, but I do think you started to see some flashes particularly in attack. You started to see some more dangerous possession. I mean, Zach Steffen made two unbelievable saves. I mean, the save he made on Barco in the second half was just unbelievable. The save he made on Julian Gressel in the first half. So you did start to see Atlanta United create chances in Columbus, and you started to see them do it before the field got ridiculous within the system that Frank DeBoer wants them to play. So it's a shame the rains came, because we would have had a much better idea after that match where the progress had gotten to. This New England side are much weaker than Columbus.
For sure.
One win on the season. It seems like there's some disconnect between Brad Friedel and his players based on some of the things that he said. This is a match where you would like to see the same type of improvement you saw against Columbus, but times two or three, because you're playing a much weaker opponent in New England.
Yeah, I think the hope for me is that this team looks like more like they did against Herediano at home than they did against Monterrey on the road. I want to see substantial improvement. And I think that I'm not calling it a must win, because for me, the next three matches for Atlanta United against New England, against FC Dallas, and against Colorado, those are the parameters in which I'm looking at Frank DeBoer and thinking, okay, if after these three games, things don't look better, substantially better, to the point where we're dominating matches I don't know how you do it on a regular basis in a three game span, but you get what I mean. It looks a lot better than it has before. If it doesn't happen in these next three matches, then it's not fire Frank DeBoer.
Mm-hmm.
Don't misread what I'm saying. It's not fire Frank DeBoer. It's Frank DeBoer assess what you have been doing and look to see how you change it.
And I hate that we agree. But
I understand. Again, when I say I want more back and forth to be entertained about the things that people are arguing about regarding Atlanta United, it's tough because a lot of the stuff we're talking
about.
Well,
you and I are just so intelligent, and what can you do? And I think we are the more emotionally restricted podcast as well.
Emotionally restricted?
Yeah, I don't. You know, people always accuse us of being anti Atlanta United because we think sometimes take a step back and look objectively. Right, exactly. So argument with DeBoer.
We do our journalistic. Well, I'll do my journalistic duty as a credentialed media member. You be a fan?
Yes, I drink whiskey and watch, and then I rewatch. No, I don't remember any of that. But anyways, so I think.
That's why we haven't done Talking Tactics, because you've been just too drunk.
Because I've been too drunk. The real reason is I've been no matches, and the last one was played in a horse trough in Columbus. So we actually will have a Talking Tactics next week, I promise. We're already working on it. But I think, so what we agree on is, you know, you mentioned the next three matches being crucial for Frank DeBoer's tenure.
And the reason I picked the next three matches is because they're relatively, not similar opponents, but in terms of talent on the field, I think Dallas is kind of in a special category, but New England and Colorado, I think they're lacking necessary talent to really, on paper, put up a good fight, mm-hmm. at least theoretically, against Atlanta United. Those are games that Atlanta United should I'm not saying will, but should manage well. FC Dallas is a whole different kind of monster with the way that they're going about this season.
And this is a big month because we talked about when the schedule was released a few months ago. June is a wild month. You're crisscrossing the country, so you've really got to have a good April and May before you get there. So your next three, you've got New England on the road, FC Dallas at home, Colorado Rapids at home. I agree. Three sides that aren't that strong. I know two of them are at home. New England on the road is far from a major home field advantage for the Revs. The one thing I'm looking at, so how can you quantify progress in these three matches? I know a lot of people hate XG.
I do.
This is a time to really look at it because XG does give you an idea of how many chances you're creating, and that's been our main issue with Atlanta United is you're not creating opportunities, and they were under one expected goals, I believe, every match up until Columbus.
My problem is that chances created needs to end in a shot, right? For it to count.
Well, that's true.
My problem is that chances are created, even though it may not end in a shot. That chance can still be created somehow.
If there are an extraordinary amount of shots blocked, then I would agree. Yeah. But I think over this three-match span, you've got to see an improvement in the chances that you're creating. And certainly, you would hope that you're going to see some end product as well because you're playing against three sides coming up that are not particularly good. And New England this weekend will be without Mancien, was their high-priced center back buy last year. He's been a total mess. He had a red card last week. And so you're already looking at a New England team that's going to be shorthanded in the back. You've got to find a way to create chances and score goals against this team. And again, you started to do that against Columbus. Now you've had a couple of weeks together, almost like another preseason, like I mentioned earlier. So hopefully you'll see Atlanta United just go to Foxborough and just really take out some frustration on a team that might be about to completely fall off the map in terms of even competing for the playoffs because they've looked so, so bad.
I'm trying to think. New England, I know I think drew 2-2. Was it last year?
Last year there was
in New England.
There was, I think it was the 1-1 where Kevin Kratz conceded the penalty late.
I think it was 2-2 and then 1-1,
was it
right?
2-2?
I believe that's
the home match we won.
No, I know. I get that.
Yeah.
But when we've gone over to play in Gillette Stadium, it's always been a tougher task than when we played them at home.
You had the 0-0 in 2017,
which is why I
remember.
Yeah, which is why I'm not saying that this needs to be a win because history has shown that Atlanta United, I guess, again, in Foxborough has not done a great job.
Yeah, but I think if you look at the context of it, I think this is a match you expect to win because that match that you did draw at Gillette last year, Kevin Kratz concedes a penalty very late, and it was a match you really dominated. That was one of the matches I think I looked back last season and said, this was really, really points dropped. And it ended up not mattering. But if you look through all the matches last season and look at where did Atlanta United not get full points in a match where they really, really controlled the game, I think that's one of the main ones you look at. So even though, you know, maybe you didn't have great success there in terms of the result, I really thought Atlanta United went there and bossed the match. So I don't see a mental block. We disagree. How about I don't see a mental block as far as playing up there. I think you go there with a lot of confidence.
I can't go Skip Bayless on you with that one. Like, there's not enough there.
Yeah.
Kurt Castle says shots are trending up for Atlanta United from four, one on goal against FC Cincinnati to 11, three on target versus Philly, then 16, five on target in Columbus. So what you heard from, I feel like we brought this up before, but what you heard from from players under Tata Martino was that the focus was very much attack-minded. Whenever he came over, he was introducing a system versus what they've, I guess, experienced with other coaches, new coaches that have come in, where it's very defensive-minded, at least to start out. And so I'm wondering if that has had anything to do with, you know, Frank DeBoer's implementation in the system,
right?
With how Atlanta has looked so far. Because I'm still willing to give it time. The system, what Frank DeBoer wants to do, I'm still want to give it time, see if they can figure it out. I think I said it on the podcast or on the radio show too. I think this season can be broken down into the weird percentages where 40% is the team, the 40% is the players legitimately playing bad.
Mm-hmm.
Pity we know can just play better. Yeah. Barco we know can play better. Gressel has been rough. He's been the least of
all the way down to Parker.
He's been the least crappy player.
Even Guzan's had some.
Everyone
moments.
Has been playing like crap. Yeah. You can throw another 40% to, the circumstances around half of these matches. Well, what did I say? Maybe the opponent. I don't know. Anyways, it was like a 40-40-20 where 20% was the circumstances around the matches. And then maybe the other 40 was the tactics of Frank DeBoer still being implemented. Hmm. But the tactics and the style, that has nothing to do with, or that's not the whole piece of the puzzle that that explains why Atlanta United has been struggling as much as they have. So I'm hoping these next 2 weeks or these last 2 weeks, they've had a chance to kind of dial it in. They've had a chance to really go over what the roles. That's the other thing I want to see in these next three matches. Kind of defined roles for everyone. I want to see Pity and exactly what he's going to be asked to do. I want to be able to watch him play and know exactly what his role is going to be moving forward. Same with Barco. Same with Tito, I guess. What formation they're going to use primarily going forward. Got to consider the fact that you're now without Franco Escobar for an extended period of time. You're also losing Mikey Ambrose, and you've got very little depth to begin with. And I'm still very concerned about George Bello and what might have happened mentally against Herediano.
Well, we'll start off with the Escobar thing because. And there hasn't been much out there yet in terms of how much time he's going to miss. Hopefully, it's a minor thing. I think it was an adductor injury, which I believe is the same injury Tito had last year. And while that injury didn't hold Tito out, I think that was a big cause of the future injuries that started to nag him throughout the season. With Franco Escobar, and we've talked about this so much, if you don't have him in your lineup, because you're so thin at right back, you almost have to change your whole system. So you talk about you want to see defined roles from the team, Eric, and I don't know that you can establish that if you're forced into a 3-4-3. So I really want to see some flexibility from Frank DeBoer. If, to me, at this point, if you don't have Escobar, to me, the drop from Escobar to Gressel at right back,
I think that needs to happen.
I think you just live with that so you can play three center mids because in the end, like I said, I'd rather have a slight weakness at right back than be playing a system that in the 3-4-3 that we have seen has not created chances. And as we've discussed, a big part of that is you're playing two center mids instead of three. So I really want to see Frank DeBoer, and Chip Torrington brings up in the chat Parkhurst at right back. I'm down with that too. But we've got to see enough flexibility to play a 4-3-3 system because I think it's so clear that this team excels with three through the middle. And one of the big reasons they were struggling to create opportunities early in the season was you're playing that 3-4-3. You could also go 3-5-2. And I think Frank DeBoer has done that a little bit this season within matches. But that's your other option. If you really want to play three in the back and Gressel's a wing back, then you just play a 3-5-2 and then you maintain your three players in the center. So you don't get overloaded in the middle, and then you can play, you know, kind of proper wing backs with Gressel on the right and most likely Breck Shea on the left.
I say defined roles. I think what I mean, or what how I want to kind of edit that statement is, I want to see the attacking players succeed in their roles as they are.
Yeah.
Because I don't think they've done that so far.
Yeah.
I think you've seen so much confusion and let's try this and maybe this will work and maybe we'll have success with this. I want to see what. The next three matches for me, I want to see exactly where, how Petey's going to play, where, how Barco's going to play, Nagby, how is he going to play versus everyone else up top. And I want to see Joseph actually get some action. More importantly than anything else, I just want to see Joseph get some action.
It's crazy to watch Joseph Martinez not just not score, but not even really have that many chances. I mean, he's a guy that even if he hardly touched the ball the past two seasons, you're expecting him to pop up with a goal or at least a big opportunity, and he hasn't really had a sniff at the ball.
Two goals so far?
Yeah, and he's missed a couple of big chances, but in the last few weeks, he hasn't even really been around the ball. And I think that stems, you know, you talk about PT, Barco, we can throw Tito into that list. We want to see the more creative players be creative and do those things. At the same time, I see a disconnect just in terms of the system finding them in those dangerous positions where they can go straight to goal. I haven't seen Ezequiel Barco or PT Martinez or Joseph Martinez receiving the ball in a situation where they're already a danger to the defense. It's been much more side-to-side possession, moving the ball back. And when those guys have been on the ball, it's been around midfield and deeper positions. So I think a big part of it is not just those guys finding out their roles, but also the guys behind them in the midfield and even the back line being positive enough in possession to take a risk or whatever it may be to find one of those guys. So when they receive the ball, they're already in the position to be creative as opposed to being expected to, you know, beat two guys out of the midfield and then approach the 18-yard box. I think you have to see more positive possession, seeing those guys receive the pass in a place where they're already dangerous in the attack.
How often we've seen both Barco and Pitty kind of try to attempt to be that guy that comes back to the ball. I think one of them needs to be the guy.
Barco
wants to be able to be the guy that receives the ball, turns, and starts distributing. I don't think Barco can do that. I really don't. I heard Home for Horror Darkness call him the poor man's Miguel Almirón, or maybe they want him to be the poor man's Miguel Almirón. I don't know that. That's not his skill set.
I think Barco is the more likely of the two players to drop deep. There's no doubt about that. He's a better passer. He's the one that would make more sense dropping into the middle to receive possession. But if you want to do it like that, Eric, where one of them drops deep and one of them just kind of stays high and plays a free roll, to me, that sounds more like a 3-5-2, where we saw last year Miguel Almirón in the playoffs. It was other players during the season underneath Joseph Martinez, and he could just go wherever he wanted. And then you had a third center mid, usually Julian Gressel, behind him. So this year, if you were to do that, you would, in a 3-5-2, you would play your two holds, Nagby, Rometty, Nagby, Laurentiis, whoever. Then you play Barco as your kind. He would basically be the quote-unquote number 10 in the 3-5-2 and PT with free roll. And that's the big thing, is I think in the system, 4-3-3 or 3-4-3, De Boer has kind of afforded both of the wingers that freedom to come back deep into midfield. And to your point, Eric, I think sometimes we've seen them maybe both coming back and putting too much, taking advantage of their freedom to the point where they're getting on the ball all the time, but not in dangerous positions. And it needs to be, okay, sometimes you guys need to stay a little higher up and not always come back and try to get involved in the midfield. I think Barco in particular is a player that likes to do that. So you could change the formation to address that. But you would like to believe that as the individuals start to play better and the system starts to click more, that would solve itself on its own.
I think what I'd like to see is just someone, whether it's Pitty, Barco, I don't care who it is, someone draw attention. Because no one has become that dangerous guy that Almirón was. I don't know that anyone can at this point.
But it could be the combination of both of them giving you what Almirón did. It doesn't have to be one guy picking up everything that he's left. You know, it could be a combination of two or three guys. Yeah,
I just need attention to be drawn elsewhere, away from Joseph, away from the wings, to open up space in the attacking third, so that someone can do something outside of dribbling around looking for an open shot. I understand the criticism about Barco not shooting more, but I think there's a legitimate reason why he doesn't just wildly take shots the way we kind of want him to right now, at least. Because I think if he takes those shots, we all criticize him about how bad of a decision maker he is in taking those shots. Pitty, the same way. Pitty, we see him in a type of crunch time situation taking wild shots from way outside the box. But that was more out of necessity than anything else.
I would venture to say that the 2/3 of his shots are from 25 yards or more, PT. Yeah. I mean, he's been, when we just discussed this, talking about these guys aren't getting into dangerous areas, one way to tell that is PT firing from 30 and 35 yards and no closer than that. So certainly you need to see a little closer to goal with him creating chances. Are you worried about him? I mean, are you...
I'm starting to be.
Do you think that this is maybe something where... I think it's similar to Barco last year.
I think it's going to be Barco 2.0.
So you really think, I can't see how this guy, at the age he is, in the prime of his career, because Barco was a younger guy, you know, he was adjusting to it, and, you know, it was a lot of things with him. With PT, I feel like he doesn't get the longer leash that Barco did as a 19-year-old. He needs to step up and be an impact player for this side sooner rather than later. And he 100% gets a time to adapt. And I give, you know, he's...
Yeah, I'm not down on him. I'm not down on him fully yet. I'm just starting to worry.
I think you need to see more from him over this next month or so, or you do start to think...
My bigger problem with Pitty is that you can't come out and say during the international break that, you know, none of the European teams wanted me. Atlanta United was the only one that paid me. I obviously want to get to Europe and all that stuff. And then put up performances like, look, he's one of the guys that I think has just been playing just flat out bad. Not because of the system, not because of Frank De Boer, but he's just been playing badly.
Yeah.
And so I look at that and I look at the things he says and I'm like, what makes you think you've earned the opportunity to play in Europe at this point?
That's what you really...
I understand you're a South American player of the year. I understand you have a ton of skill, a ton of talent. But for whatever reason, you get put on a field where you're the most talented player on paper than anyone else, mm-hmm. and you happen to be in a weird system that maybe you haven't played in a while, and you have no idea how to play soccer anymore?
Yeah, and I Come think with him, I mean, and to be fair, and Chris Lombardi brings this up on the YouTube, I mean, I do think fitness played a role. I mean, he had no offseason whatsoever, and you go into the
I'm taking all that into account, but at some point, we need to see you ball out.
I'm not going to give him a season to adapt, like I did with Barco. I'm
still willing to give Barco more time because he's as young as he is.
With PT, it's just you were signed to come right into the lineup, and he's not a like replacement from him, but you were expected to bring some of the creativity and attacking onus that you lost with Almiron going. Like you said, that hasn't happened yet. Let's see if it comes. But again, this is a guy that if we start to see the same types of things of the next few matches that we've seen these first month or so of the season, then I think you start to get worried. And the big thing with him is, you know, you talk about the stuff that he's saying. It just sounds like he's kind of generally going to give you some weird quotes, like maybe not a bad quote, but maybe overly honest or something like that. Because he said a few things with regards to
The stuff that he said during the international break, on the podcast, we brought up during preseason or before even signed with Atlanta United. Yeah.
So this
is not new. I found it hilarious that everyone picked up on this when he said it in the international break, but he said it a month before that as well to media, not like to himself under his breath. He said it to media.
No, I thought just his statement before he even came to Atlanta of, well, they trusted me more than the European clubs. That's why I'm coming. That alone tells you this guy wants to go to Europe first and foremost.
He's not doing himself any favors right now. And I think if you're someone that wants to go there, you gotta adapt to whatever's presented to you. I'm not saying that the situation for him right now is optimal.
Yeah,
but at some point, just go play soccer, man.
Yeah,
go find a way to win. Go find a way to be a leader. It's as a South American Player of the Year. He's not doing that right now.
Yeah, I mean, you would expect him to.
He did get married, though. Congratulations to Pity.
Well, some would say congratulations.
Did you see his face?
No, was he happy? Did he smile?
He looked incredibly excited.
I can't imagine him like.
He looked so excited. I'm being sarcastic.
So he had his normal PT. And he also has that like weird like scowl, which it means nothing, but that hurts you with fans when you're struggling, when you're just you're kind of the way you look. He has this.
I like the looks he does give. I get the overall frustration. I understand. That's why I'm not done with him yet.
No, of course not.
But my hope is that this next three games, I'm completely like, all right, well, you know what? I can totally back off that now because. He's changed my mind.
The player of the year in the Primera last year, this guy should be one of, if not the best player in MLS the moment he takes the pitch.
And he is forgettable now.
And we need to start to see that. You know, that was one of the things with Miguel Almiron was you could tell the latest people realized he
three,
was going to take
matches,
the lead. Yeah, I mean, I would say even the Minnesota match, the snow match, I mean, you're like, this guy is good.
Oh, no, I would even say the Red Bulls.
You could,
just imagine the reaction from the league. Hey, had he made that chip over Robles?
That famous chip over Robles.
Imagine had that gone in. No, and he would have been the talk of the league. And then you backed that up with what you did in Minnesota.
I think you were expecting to see that from PT. Is even if he had a period to adapt, you're expecting to see him. Like you can just look at him and say, okay, that guy's one of the best players on the pitch, and that really just hasn't been the case yet.
You think maybe PT? The problem is that there was something going on with the marriage. and there was a lot of stress going on, and now that it's finalized and it's done, maybe they had the plan for it, and that was just too much.
It is very stressful to plan a wedding.
Look, it's a legitimate reason why he might not be. Look, I hear from Kirk Castle on YouTube on the stream. Pity took a while to adapt moving to River Plate too. He seems like he needs comfort with the people around him to really hit his height. He's the best player in MLS on paper. He's the best player in MLS as a South American Player of the Year. He's the best player in MLS. At what point have you seen that this season?
And he's coming into River Plate as a 21-year-old.
At what point have you seen best player in MLS, South American Player of the Year, playing for Atlanta United?
And look, he did need time to adapt at River Plate. We're giving
him time
to adapt. Yeah. But the reason I think it took him a full season, some would even say 18 months for PT to really adapt, is he was a 21-year-old there. I mean, he was he came from Huracan. That was his first, you know, time really under the lights with a lot of expectations was at River Plate. At Atlanta United, the expectations are probably lower for him than they were when he came into River Plate. So yes, he needs time to adapt, but I wouldn't, I don't think, I think it's apples to oranges if you're going to compare his early adaptation to Premier and playing at River.
A Ray on the YouTube has a good first take type of question. Is it pity or is it the system? You want to be Skip Bayless? I'll be
I just struggle with questions like this because the answer is somewhere in between. That's why I'm terrible for this stuff because I'm going to say, well, no, neither. It's all right.
You'll bring rational discussion. I want chaos.
I'm going to say. I'm going to say I don't want chaos.
No, that was a joke. I wasn't asking.
Right, I know. I mean, I think it is. It's a lot of things, but system is a big part of it because the players around him are struggling with the concepts of how to get those players the ball in the first place where they can excel. So to me, even though PT individually has some questions to answer, I think the main, his seemingly non-existence in attack, I think it has a lot more to do with system than him. I think if you say that Tata Martino stayed and he replaced Miguel Miron and they were playing 3-5-2 and he's playing underneath, there would be an adaptation period, but I certainly think you'd see him looking more dangerous, creating chances, receiving the ball in dangerous areas because the players around him would already know what was expected.
We'd still be upset because he's not Almiron and he's not doing the same thing thing that Almiron does, which he's not going to. He's not that player. I'm totally willing to give him time. The little breakdown I did in terms of 40-40-20, I apply that directly to Pity as well. I still kind of apply it to Barco this year. I apply it to the whole team. Individuals, the coaching staff, all that stuff. But these next three matches, New England, Dallas, and Colorado, I just got to see massive improvement. I think you mentioned at one point that you got to see a massive jump in the quality of play. I think ultimately that's what I want, just the quality of play. If you miss your chances, if you can't find a way to hit the target, if you can't find a way to get one in the net, but you've got a ton of excellent quality chances, I'm cool.
Yeah.
I'll take a 1-1 draw. I'll even take a loss as long as those chances are there.
Yeah.
And I can visually see, okay, it's starting to come together.
Yeah.
I need that cue.
On the off chance that Atlanta United lose and have 20, 25 shots and 2.5-3 XG, I agree. I'll come in and say, well, you saw progress. And I think when you're adapting to a new system with new players, at this point, the performance is really what's important. It's the performance, and you just it just needs to be better than what we've seen. And I'll keep banging this horse. I really, really thought that the Columbus match, when I went back and rewatched the portion of the match that was an actual football match, I thought you saw huge improvement from Atlanta United. I thought you saw exactly what you're talking about, Eric. Just more a much more positive attacking team that looked like creating chances. You go back and look at, again, I keep bringing up XG. You had about 1.5 XG in a match where you couldn't hardly kick the ball on the ground.
Yeah.
And then you compare that to, you know, playing on turf and having 0.4, 0.3 XG in some of those matches. So you saw Atlanta United create more than they've created in a match where the surface was virtually unplayable for 2/3 of the match. So I think it's coming. I think it's coming. But you need to see that what you saw in those first 25-30 against Columbus for 90 minutes against New England. And I know that rain is on the forecast.
Well, I want to...
It ain't going to be... there's no way...
I want to point this out. First of all, it's on turf, so that shouldn't be that big of a factor. The rain is supposed to stop like by noonish.
Okay.
It drops down to like 5% around noon, even lower than that around like 3, 4 o'clock. It creeps up a little bit around 4%, not even all that high. The temperature is something that I thought maybe we can consider. It's supposed to be about 65 around kick, and the wind about 10, 11 miles an hour.
And I would just generally say...
So those are going to be like breezy conditions, not anything all that crazy, not anything they haven't already played in before.
If you see a forecast for rain, it's very unlikely it's going to end up like that Columbus match. I mean, those were exceptionally... torrid conditions. I mean, the field was completely a mess. So rain is usually not going to have such a drastic impact. And like you said, Eric, it shouldn't have an impact on the match this weekend. You know, I want to talk a little about the lineup because
it's so weird because you have no idea how he's going to come out.
Right. I think we're going to learn so much about Frank de Boer and whether he is willing to play in a back four regularly this weekend, because if he comes out in a back three, he's telling you straight up, I cannot play four in the back with a right back if Franco Escobar is out. So if
that
you
means
see
he does not trust
from Gressel
like
to Gordon Wild,
he does not trust anyone
whoever.
Else on his roster. Yeah,
and so that's the first thing I'm looking for in terms of the 11 is if there's no Escobar, you're going to learn a lot about what Frank DeBoer thinks about his depth, what he thinks about his defense, based on whether he's willing to stay with the 4-3-3 we saw in Columbus or go back into the 3-4-3 that we saw when Escobar was out. That's the first thing that I'm looking for. The other thing is, do you think PT would come right back? And he's been training. Do you think he's right back into the 11?
I think so.
Yeah. I think so, too.
I think him and Barco, as long as they're healthy and as long as they're... I think that if they are playing terribly, it's being masked by how bad Atlanta United is right now.
Mm-hmm.
But I expect both Barco and Pity to improve.
Yeah. And I would say Barco, for all of, and he's not been that good, obviously, you haven't been creating chances, but I'd say he's probably been your most dangerous attacking player on the whole at looking at the season, so you certainly can't sit him.
He's going. I feel like he's the one that I feel like is going to draw the most attention. Now, how he can handle that attention on the field,
mm-hmm.
in the midfield, going forward, and what his ability to distribute looks like after that, that remains to be seen, because I don't think that's what I feel like is not his bag of tricks, because I just don't think he does that well. I think what he does well is attack players. Well, he tries to attack players 1v1, and I'm not saying he does it well, but he attacks players 1v1, and he tries to put himself in a position to shoot or draw just enough attention to open up someone like Joseph or Pity or someone else outside the box for a better angle, better shot, more high-quality opportunity to score.
I think he's the one guy that has shown the willingness.
I'm trying to think, has he beat a defender 1v1?
Yeah, he's single dribbles.
And created a goal out of it? I'm trying to think. I could be wrong.
We haven't scored. How many goals have we scored?
No, I'm not even talking this year. I'm talking last year.
It's tough. I mean, I think Barco is more of a passer, more of a playmaker, pretty good dribbler, too. I think, hypothetically, your two wingers complement each other so well because you've got PT on one side that's a dribbler, direct player, and then on the other side you have Barco, who's a little more of a get your head up, look to find the right pass. So I think that, in theory, you've got two wingers that complement each other very, yep. very well.
Your expectations for the next three matches in terms of points? Like what? Maybe not expectations. What's your hope for the next three matches?
Nine.
Obviously, you want nine.
9 points.
If they don't get nine?
Seven.
What's the minimum?
Seven. I think if you lose...
See, for me, it's five.
And again, and to be fair, Eric, it's about performance. So if you got five and you dominated the two draws, it's better than what we've seen. But I think this is the period where if Atlanta United are really going to get rolling, this is the period to kind of do it, where there's still not a ton of pressure on you because it's still early in the season and you're playing against weaker opposition. This is the time to do it. I will say one thing about New England, though. And, you know, to go back to our constant theme of that Atlanta United have struggled to create chances despite having a lot of possession, New England are a team that are very comfortable playing without the ball. Very, very comfortable looking to counterattack. And they have some creative players in a Carlos Gil. Is it pronounced Gil or Gil? G-I-L. Carlos.
You're guessing.
Those Spanish names, yeah, that's a tough one. He's a guy, a new signing that I think can really give you problems. You and I talked quite a bit about Diego Fagundes before we went on the air, who I think is a very underrated player. So if I look at this New England roster, not very good, but their strongest players, I do think, are an attack. And once again, you're playing a team that's comfortable playing without the ball. They have quality players that can get you out on the counter. So once again, Atlanta United are in this situation where I think we can just safely assume they're going to have a ton of possession. But if they're unable to create chances, they're basically handing opportunities to New England on a silver platter. So that's what I'm really interested in. And it's kind of been a theme all year, but this is a great chance to kind of get that monkey off your back in terms of playing against teams that are going to sit back and counter. New England are going to do that, but they don't have a ton of quality. So this would be a great time to get some confidence playing against a team that's going to bunker.
Yeah, we'll see how that goes. Hopefully, we're all hoping for the best. We're all hoping for a swift turnaround to how the season started. I can't take the Orlando City jokes. I'm already over it. I kind of feel how they...
Twitter is burning to the ground as far as the way I see it. I mean, it's wild to watch.
It's funny. I forget what his name was. The guy that used to always hound me on Twitter, call me the mouth breather or whatever.
Of course. Yeah.
So now that Orlando City is, you know, doing well by their standards and Atlanta United is not, he is back to.
I tweeted this, by the way.
So much crap.
Orlando City still suck.
Oh, yeah. Absolutely.
Did you see that first goal they got to Colorado that went off the defender's back?
I forget
who it was. I forget which defender it was. There was a long ball into the box, and the defender turned around and hit him in the back and went. No, they suck.
Look, they need to take a picture of this moment because it's not going to last.
Yeah, if any Orlando fan hears this, I'll wager whatever you want that Atlanta United finishes.
Are you worried that Atlanta United
is 12th
in the Eastern Conference right now?
No. I mean, again, you have to look at matches played.
Do you even care? Because I looked at this for the first time today, and I was like, oh, Atlanta United's last.
I don't.
I also saw four matches played where everyone else has at least, other than Toronto, everyone else has at least five or six.
Yeah, it's a nice little talking point. I mean, it's certainly for media to, you know, the defending champs are in last place. And certainly, I think the real story is the struggles to create chances, more so than even the results. But I look at that, matches in hand, still early, four matches that were all sandwiched around CCL fixtures. I the table doesn't bother me one bit right now.
No.
Not one bit.
I'm not, like, and the changes that could happen to Atlanta United going into the rest of the season. They could absolutely turn it around. Those same changes could happen to every single team, or the opposite could happen to every single team on the table right now. So it's weird for me to think, oh, four or five, six matches in, I've already gauged exactly what this team is.
Yeah.
Even if you think they're great.
Yeah.
Portland and Seattle are the lessons to be taken away from their championship seasons and what you can do before and after the All-Star break. So just keep that in mind every time you see Atlanta United in 12th. I think NYCFC is pretty much where they're going to be. Just FYI.
Yeah, I mean, if you...
But I'm looking at, like, Orlando City. When have they ever proven that they're going to outlast the struggles and opponents of the season?
Let's not forget they won six in a row last year and then went on to win, once in the next 5 months. So
Toronto has started great, but, man, with all their locker room issues this offseason and going into the season, I don't expect them to stay as high as they are. Like, there's nothing I can take away from the standings right now because it's way too early in the season very much against the fire Frank DeBoer stuff.
The next month for Atlanta United, I think it's similar in terms of how you look at the table. You just need, I'd say, about that much time till we can really get an idea of what to expect.
Yeah, the difference between, you know, us and Chicago is 3 points. That's one win. All of a sudden we're in eighth place. We're one step away from from a playoff spot, and that in itself would mean nothing. So I heard it on several podcasts, and I just thought,
an easy angle because it sounds so wild, right?
I guess we're falling into the same trap.
Well, we're talking about why you shouldn't talk about it, right? And that's the worst trap to fall into.
That's how you do radio, people.
The people who give credence to bad opinions by talking about them. But no, I mean, I just think it's an easy... I mean, they talk about ESPN FC. They've mentioned it a bunch of times. I mean, it's just an easy thing to point at. Oh, the defending champions are in last, but... The real story is you're not creating chances going forward and adapting to a new manager. The table is just a correlation of that coupled with CCL fatigue and not playing as many matches.
Yep.
So cool it. We're not the worst team in the East.
I promise you. Not yet.
Goodness.
Time will tell, though.
Goodness. Yeah, some people are convinced we are. But, yeah, I mean, man, I think that's the main thing. I mean... I think you're going to see. I hate to do this because Eric.
No, are you about to give a prediction?
Yeah.
Don't do it. Let's just skip predictions this week.
Oh, really? Well, first of all, Eric.
No, come on. Like, even that, we got to change up the juju somehow, man.
No, I like them losing and you being to blame. I think it's great.
I don't like that.
The worst thing Eric has done, aside from jinxing Atlanta on wins and losses, is claiming it was going to be a beautiful, free-flowing game in Columbus, and then God decided that was an act of God. That rain was Eric.
That was the Dread God. We cannot, specifically attacking me right there.
That's what I think it is. The Dread God and you are the ones that have the. I think the rest of us Atlanta fans, we've defeated the Dread God. He's in the rearview mirror. But for some reason, you and him have something special where he just loves to torture you.
Sacrifice must be made.
Let's go back to the start quickly because we're wrapping it up here. So
yeah.
Match, because if you know the season opened against Herediano, and I remember we sat here in this studio and Eric said, if it's not 4-0 or 5-0, I'm gonna be furious with the quality of this team. We all know what happened. Then
let's be real, we all also saw what happened in Kennesaw.
Yes,
So imagine that first
what
leg.
What a surprise.
Imagine that first leg being played on a surface that was even close to
Well, we could talk about the normal. Surface changing, but we could also talk about Eric was banned from Twitter that week and from making predictions. And what happened? You had one of your best performances of the year. And then, the Cincinnati one was epic. Eric guaranteed a win on the Mott's Twitter account.
I didn't.
On the day of the mayor. Right now he wants to say that he
did. I believe that was... We can go through the IP stuff and figure out who tweeted what from
IP
where.
IP we shall go through.
And I'm pretty sure it will show that it came from your phone.
Well.
Not mine.
There's no proving that. Anyways.
There are people.
So Eric's
with the FBI
slowly ruined things. And now you want
to
not allow me to even make a prediction because you want to get yourself off the hook.
So if we make a prediction now, and I make a prediction, and it goes the other way, after me saying I didn't want to make the prediction... Can we then shift the blame to you?
No.
Because that would be fair to me.
You can't do it after one match. You can't just...
Okay, but it's got to start
history,
somewhere, right?
You know, Eric's the reason Tata Martino left. I mean, we can go all the way back through the things that Eric has been wrong on and basically influenced what actually happened, a jinx, shall we say.
Hey, listen, everyone thought I was wrong on Tito, and look at him right now.
What is wrong about Tito?
I'm just saying.
You're gonna Tito is a bad run of form for 2 weeks, and Eric wants to bring that up.
2 weeks. Please.
Anyways, I'm gonna make a prediction. You don't have to, but I still think I have to be wrong a few times to reach the level of blame Eric, of hashtag blame Eric. Chris Lombardi says no predictions. Chris, I love you, buddy, but I'm gonna say 3-0 Atlanta United. I think I really liked what I saw against Columbus in terms of the attack. You're playing a team that is, I mean, you think Atlanta United is close to crisis. Some of the quotes Brad Friedel has had over the... There's a clear disconnect.
Do we have time to pull some of them up?
The ones from last year are my favorite.
It's probably going to take too long.
Well, we've been here 45 minutes. But my favorite one from last year was, players are too nice... new guys in the dressing room, the players are too nice to them. When I played, this is not a direct quote, obviously, but he was saying, when I played, everyone was, a total jerk to the new player. You had to earn your way back in. Now all these... players are too nice.
Calling them snowflakes.
Classic Brad Friedel. But I think 3-0 Atlanta United because I think New England are in a really bad place right now. I saw progress against Columbus. There's been 2 weeks to assess and get ready for this match. So between the fact you're playing an opponent that's low quality, you're rested for the first time all year, you showed improvement in the last match, I think you're going to see a very good performance from Atlanta United. And then next week, when everyone thinks that we're the best team in MLS, we'll come here and say, hold on a second, that was against New England. Let's let's keep it going.
You know what?
He's going to make a prediction.
Summarize your prediction for me real quick.
I just did. I literally just did.
Just do it one more time.
Okay, I predict 3-0 for Atlanta United because, one, you showed a lot of attacking progress against Columbus before the field became a mess. Number two, you've had rest and 2 weeks to get the system down. We know it's been a problem. And number three, New England sucks.
Okay, my prediction, my official prediction that I'm sure we'll go against and I'll get blamed for it.
Here we go.
3-0. You've had 2 weeks of rest.
Oh, wow.
New England's a really bad team, and you showed a lot of progress against Columbus, at least in the time that you could actually play soccer. Boom, that's my prediction.
So you guys want to blame me, but Eric just did this. Wow. Not only, this seems intentional. This seems that you're in, because you knew I had a good prediction, and you're going to jinx my prediction to try to make me look bad, because you know.
It's not my fault now.
The power of hashtag.
It's not my fault now.
Whatever. He did that on purpose. Look, it's going to take quite a little. Look, I didn't make Tata Martino leave. That's all I have.
I love the YouTube stream right now.
The YouTube, yeah, you guys.
A lot of ha-has, and this one's officially on Josh now. Torches and pitchforks.
And of course, if you're, as most of our listeners, to downloading, listening to the podcast, you can watch us and interact with us live, ask us questions, all that. Subscribe to our YouTube channel on YouTube, MOTS Podcast. Before we go, for those that have asked, we do have another Talking Tactics coming. The problem was the Columbus match, there were 20 minutes of something. And I'm not going to go over the tactics of playing in a monsoon.
You sent me stuff. No. You wrote your piece that you do after every game.
Yeah, I did a piece.
Breaking down the tactics. And I'm like, Josh, really? After that match, you found something to write about? How?
You can go back and read that on Dirty South Soccer. I did find some tactical things to discuss. But basically what we are doing is using a few clips from that game, and we'll combine them with some clips from this New England match. to give you something a little more thorough, because there just wasn't enough to go off of in that Columbus match. So we're going to record that Monday. Yeah. Is that the plan next week, Monday? So we'll get that out to you next week.
We're also going to clone Josh.
Yes, Eric's found a lot of... Okay, well, no one's going to know what that means out of context.
I have technology that allows me to clone Josh.
Well, that's great, because I don't have to come every week. I can
use your clone.
Yeah, right. You can use the clone. Or you could just, if Sam can't come, you could have two of me, one of you.
The people just want to see.
I don't think I would get along with my clone. I think I'd be jealous.
You by yourself? We'll see. We'll see on Monday.
How are you going to make him look? Is he going to look physically like me? Or I don't want him to be look stronger or anything like that.
So I've got a machine, and this machine takes a copy of you and presents it right next to you.
So it's like a hologram, like Michael Jackson.
It's going to be better than a hologram. It's going to be actually you. It's going to take your cells.
Like I can reach out and touch.
Oh, yeah.
The clone, wow.
You're going to be able to pet this person. That's not you, but
I don't know that I would want to hang out with me, really.
Monday, yes. Come find out how we clone Josh.
We'll talk about tactics, too.
That's a real thing. We actually are going to clone Josh. I just can't tell you how.
Hashtag clone Josh, hashtag blame Eric. So, emojis, as always.
No, you know what? I just want hashtag clone Josh and hashtag blame Eric.
Okay, that's good.
Just those two. No emojis, yeah. Just hashtag blame Josh and hashtag clone Eric.
Just to explain, as always, if you listened this far, we do a little listener research. You can tweet at us.
I love how you call it research.
That's true. We don't do that much research, but
we know how many of you listen, though. We do know.
Yeah. Our numbers are pretty decent. So at MOTS Podcast, at Josh B914, at Eric G. Quintana, hashtag blame Eric, or hashtag clone Josh.
Those two.
They could be together, or you could just choose.
Oh, yeah.
One of them. But just to reiterate, and you can follow me on Twitter at Josh B914.
Follow me at Eric G. Quintana. Follow the podcast at MOTS Podcast. We're on Facebook, Instagram. You can follow me on Instagram. It's AIRIK, Eric. 3, 2, 1.
You ladies out there, single man right here, shoot in the DM.
The last 2 weeks.
Get in Eric, slide into those DMs of Eric.
Been very boring for me.
I'm single too, but I don't beg for
I didn't say a word. You just did.
Whatever. I think we all know that Eric
I wasn't
going to
bring it up at all.
Yeah, sure. Sure. We're both single, actually, so, you know.
All right, let's get off.
There's a reason for that, I think, that we're both
saying. All right, let's wrap it up before this gets weird.
Yeah, let's get out of here.
All right, until next time. See you later, Lana.